This City Wire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies, from healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution. Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. Scottish Mortgage is considered the flagship trust of Edinburgh-based investment managers Baillie Gifford and is the UK's largest investment trust. As with any investment, please note capital is at risk. To find out more, please visit scottishmortgageit.com.
Hi, this is Céline Wojcik, and I'm here today with Stefan Pauls, CEO of Moonfare, and Christian Staub, Managing Director for Europe at Fidelity. Stefan and Christian are with us today to discuss the tie-up between Fidelity and Moonfare.
Hi, Christian. Hi, Stefan. Thank you both for joining me. So to start off with, I want to talk about the partnership between Moonfare and Fidelity. Tell me what the long-term goal is here for both businesses and what's the vision within private markets.
I guess we should both comment from our own perspectives. And hi, Céline, thank you for having us. This is Christian. I mean, this has been quite a long time in the making. When I remember, Stefan, you and I spoke, this is now, I guess, about 2 years ago, actually. And it took us, quite some time to understand each other's businesses, to understand the players involved, and to really start to grasp the enormous opportunity that we have by forming this partnership. And when I talk about partnership, it's a partnership that extends into two areas. One is a distribution partnership whereby Fidelity brings to its B2B, business-to-business clients, its corporate clients, the Moonfare platform. We obviously run money for many of the largest banks, distributors, insurance companies that might have a strong interest in private asset access. But there's also a linkage in that Fidelity has taken a minority share in Moonfare because we strongly believe that what Stefan and the team have built is superb and will create a lot of value in the future. But Stefan, how about from your vantage point?
Yeah, look, first of all, thank you so much, Céline, for having us. Delighted to be here. And to add to what Christian just said, when we first met, Christian and I, Fidelity International and Moonfare, we really shared the same mission, which is the democratization of private markets. And we both were united, in seeing a problem for private individuals, for private investors to access private equity in particular. And we said, look, it's an access issue, but it's also an education issue. And we wanted really to make this available on a broader scale. And this partnership really is the ideal solution because, we have a direct-to-consumer business. This is for self-directed investors that know what they do, that understand the asset class. But of course, there are dozens of investors out there that need the advice on asset allocation, on the asset class, on J-curve, on distribution, on illiquidity, et cetera. And this is exactly where the partnership comes into play. It allows us to address a different customer group that is with the wealth managers and the private banks. And they provide what we at Moonfare can't and won't and do not want to provide, which is the advice and the handholding when it comes to the actual process.
And now it's available in Europe and the UK, right? But Moonfare obviously has kind of a global presence. Are you looking to take advantage of that and expand a bit more geographically the availability to your clients, Christian?
So maybe I'll let Stefan comment on the overall Moonfare rollout, which indeed is quite global in nature, as it relates to the specific partnership between Moonfare and Fidelity, where, again, we're targeting the B2B, so the institutional market. We have started with a select number of markets in continental Europe and the UK. We look to expand from here, but it will be a step-by-step expansion. Remember introducing what is a very easy to handle, but nevertheless technologically quite sophisticated platform. Introducing such a platform into a large organization requires a multi-month educational and introductory process. So we take one step at a time because that's what we can do as a company. But Stefan, do you want to comment on the broader rollout of Moonfare, where you have been going quite at pace in recent quarters?
You said that Moonfare in the meantime became really the most international player when it comes to democratizing private markets in the digital space. We are active and operational in more than 22 countries. Just 3 weeks ago, we added in 1 week, 4 countries, Israel, Finland, Portugal, and Sweden. As you know, we are active across all major continents in Asia with our presence in Singapore and in Hong Kong. We are in the meantime in the US and gaining rapidly traction there. We are in Europe, Israel, I mentioned, and there's more to come. We are thinking about, of course, expanding our footprint in Asia, even over and beyond Singapore and Hong Kong. And we are also thinking about, when it comes to the broader Americas, we are thinking about Canada and one step further, probably not for the next 12 months, but beyond. LATAM is also on our Go International plan. And this makes us the most prominent and most international player globally.
Mm-hmm. And just staying on Moonfare and what you've been doing with the business for a second, last year you also set up a secondary market. So I'm curious how that's working, because obviously providing liquidity is one of the big kind of topics when it comes to democratizing private assets.
No, definitely. And this was something that we figured out very early on when we listened to our customers, that this liquidity thing is really, from a private individual perspective, an obstacle. Yeah. So what we did is, and it took us a while, we developed really, in this case, a global innovation. It's a digital secondary marketplace where after a certain period, you can put your LP stake, your stake into a certain fund, your investment, let's say into a Carlyle. You can put it on our digital marketplace. We have in the meantime more than 25,000 people onto our platform. So theoretically, all of them could bet on your stake. And this is done in a fully digitalized process. We have 2 windows per year. So it's not a daily or weekly liquidity. It's twice a year, but enough to secure a path to liquidity. And then we let the private market forces play. And guess what? You know, we had now 40, 50 transactions on the platform, and all of them have been trading above NAV, above the net asset value, which represents the mark-to-market value of the underlying fund. So it's a very, you know, well-working, well-functioning marketplace, but you never know. And we wanted to really provide a super professional solution. This is why we have partnered with one of the largest institutional secondary players in the world, which is Lexington Partners, which are great partners into this. And they serve as a backstop in case, you know, the market forces don't come to play and are de facto, so to say, supporting this path to liquidity with their professional approach. It's new and doesn't exist. And it's really a very good solution for liquidity. A liquidity mechanism for private individuals.
And while we're talking about liquidity, Christian, I'd like to get your opinion on this as well. How do you kind of think about liquidity when it comes to private markets, and how do you balance the need to increase access but also protect investors from the other side?
Sure, Céline. This is a great question. And, you know, as I outlined, we very much focus on the B2B side of the business. Stefan, at the outset of this conversation, talked about the democratization of private assets. And that's very important for individuals, but it's also important for the institutional clients that we deal with, the distributors, because ultimately they cater to individual clients. So the key parameters that we're working on is indeed the size of the ticket. Remember, many of the most prominent private equity funds require, you know, high single digit or even double digit $1 million minimum size tickets, which as a private, you know, you just in normal cases can't do. And therefore, bundling these smaller tickets together is one of the key advantages that this Moonfare platform has. The other piece is indeed around liquidity, because we do know that private clients oftentimes do run into personal situations where they do require liquidity. So adding on what Stefan just described as an additional tool is very important to us as Fidelity as we promote this digital platform and provide access. I think the third one is around education, where, again, Fidelity can play a big role. Think about a large, you know, high net worth or a retail bank in Europe that has literally hundreds, if not thousands, of advisors. Those advisors need to be trained, educated. They need to understand the differences between certain private equity sub-asset classes, like private debt, private equity, real estate. They need to understand the different thematics, the different risks profiles of products that are being launched. So this is where Fidelity, with its broad network, its on-the-ground presence in all these markets that Stefan is targeting, can really help and accelerate the path for Moonfare.
Stefan, did you want to add something?
No, I think Christian said exactly what it is about. You know, it's one thing is the access, yeah, and this is what we are providing, I would say, on a super institutional grade level. You know that we only take the best funds on the platform, so we do the curation. This is extremely important because for the private individual, it's very difficult to differentiate between fund A or fund B in the spectrum. This is why we have a team of 15 people from within the industry that are doing the selection. We look at some 200 funds in a given year, and then 20 really make it to the platform. So one is the access and curation point. But as Christian rightly pointed out, the other thing really that is the bottleneck, and this is, a Herculean task for the entire industry, is the education. And this is why I'm so glad to be here, because every interview and every, you know, being on stage and talking to people helps to educate people about the beauty of this asset class. It's a matter of understanding. And this is where this partnership plays a crucial role, of course, together with the intermediaries, together with the wealth managers, with the private banks, to get, you know, this education done and really convince and find the ground for people to understand what private equity is really about.
And Moonfare, I mean, the platform itself is open to kind of professional and sophisticated investors, right? Or individuals who go through wealth managers, financial advisors. Do you see a time when you will be able to open it up to more retail or mass affluent clients as well?
Look, we have already done a step now in the US. We have launched and developed a product. It's a portfolio product. We call it Moonfare Core Portfolio, which is a strategy for buyout. We have Moonfare Growth Portfolio, which is for growth companies. And we will very soon launch also our Moonfare Venture Portfolio, end of April. So we have baskets, and those are available also already for accredited investors. So it's a much larger group. And you know that just in the US, we are talking about 16 million people. So it's quite a lot, but this is not enough. And, you know, if we take our mission to democratize private markets, and by the way, I'm so much convinced it's the right thing to do, more or less every private investor should get access to this asset class. We have to take things further. One regime which exists in Europe, which we are, you know, looking into and pursuing, is the ELTIF regime, European Long-Term Investment Fund Initiative. It's a regime that allows to go broader and with lower minimum tickets. There are other, we call it wrappers, you know, or shapes and forms, call it, like securitization. We are, of course, following the trend of tokenization. But, you know, for us, it's less a matter of what we innovate and what we come up with ideas. It always has to do with how far the regulators want to go to open up the market space even further. I think they will, they have to, because this discrepancy between, you know, private markets and public markets, and only few individuals can play private markets professionally, that has to disappear.
What would you say then to some of the critics of this, though, who think that this is just a disaster waiting to happen?
Well, you mean, you know, private asset classes as being risky. Obviously, that's a topic we should discuss. I think the accumulation of of capital in private assets segment over the last 30 years has been the biggest change in the industry. And it's been a good change because it has fostered innovation. If you think about how difficult it was even 10, 15 years ago for startups, particularly here in Europe, to get access to capital, close to impossible because the banks wouldn't lend. There is now a very healthy, early stage and late stage venture capital industry emerging. Private assets, we have actually seen the number of quoted companies being reduced over the last 20 years. They've gone down. But the pool of private companies is X times larger than the pool of public companies. So when you think about true diversification from an individual portfolio perspective, it is crystal clear, that private assets needs to be part of it. Now, obviously, you want to go high quality, and this is where Stefan's point is so crucial, that private equity doesn't equal private equity. You need to do a lot of, a lot of research to be able to make the right decisions. But as an asset class, it does propose many, many opportunities, in particular in an environment where we have the challenge of yield still being extremely low, close to historic lows, and normal retail client portfolios simply not generating enough yield. And this is where private asset classes, I'm thinking private debt, but also private equity to some extent, can be a very helpful tool to bring some constant cash inflow into a traditional portfolio.
Yeah, and look, if I may add to this and fully aligned with Christian, but think about it. No one is saying put all your eggs into one basket and play 100% in private equity. But think about it. On average, a private individual today is allocating 2 to 3% of their total portfolio wealth to private equity. On average, a professional investor is allocating 25%. So a huge gap to make up for. And then think about, even companies, endowments that are aiming to preserve capital. I'm talking about Yale Endowment. I'm talking about Harvard. I'm talking about, some of the most wealthiest families. They allocate even above 50% to the asset class. So even risk averse, capital preserving professional investors are playing it. And there's a reason for it. If you add private equity to a typical portfolio of bond and stocks, it has two positive impacts. It's reducing risk and it's increasing at the same time the yield or the IRR. But what I'm concerned about, and this is what I share with you, Selin, it's there are so many offerings out there. And every day we see some, one playing in real estate or in art or in private equity or in direct deals. It's very confusing and it is super important that the quality is right. Yeah, because for the private individual to select the right pieces for his or her private market strategy, that's really crucial. If you play private equity as an average, as an index, it's not better than the stock markets. You have to play with the top 25, they call it top quartile funds. And this is where professional providers, professional suppliers, professional platforms like Fidelity and us come into play, who have been doing this for 20, 30 years, and who are responsible really on behalf of the private individual to make sure that there is an offering they can trust in. And the loss of trust, if people will lose trust because there are some offerings out there that will not promise what they deliver what they promise, this is really what concerns me.
So kind of back to this product question, I'd like to find out, Christian, what Fidelity is doing in this area, because you've brought in some teams. Aside from the partnership with Moonfair, you guys are building some funds and private credit in some other areas as well. Maybe can you tell me a bit about that and how you think you can ensure this quality that Stefan's talking about?
Sure. So Fidelity, historically, we're very much a research-based investment company catering to investors around the world, institutional space, but then also directly and indirectly to individual clients or to clients that are saving as part of their employment with a corporation. So we have a very broad-based client base, and therefore we need a very well-diversified offering across all asset classes. In fact, one of the other big trends in the asset management industry that we've seen over the last 7 to 10 years is that large institutional partners, they want to deal with fewer asset managers, but they deal with those asset managers in a much more holistic and much more strategic fashion, which means if as an asset manager, you want to have a seat at the table of these large institutional asset pools, you need to be able to have a very broad proposition in terms of products and capabilities. And this is clearly where private asset plays a big role. We have had for many, many years, in addition to our liquid offerings in multi-asset equity, fixed income space, we have had a thriving real estate franchise. But we have extended, as you rightly point out, Selin, we have extended into private credit space. In fact, in November, we launched our first CLO, the Fidelity Grand Harbor Fund, which is fully aligned to the ESG philosophy and has is subject to the article SFDR Article 8 rating, so it has an ESG label to it, which is a key angle. So product that we're developing in private credit space in particular, which will be communicating in the future around private lending, for example, around structured credit. All of these initiatives will happen with a very strong sustainability angle in mind. But that means that we selectively launch direct exposure products. And we're also very happy to offer to clients a more bundled approach, which Moonfare, and we just discussed this a while ago, which Moonfare is perfectly positioned to provide. The research angle is very open, is very important. And the idea of being open platform and integrate third-party product is increasingly important as we talk to our most strategic clients.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that, actually, because obviously Fidelity has this big asset management business, right? And you have your funds and you're developing strategies within private markets. And then you've got the partnership with Moonfare, which provides access to maybe third-party managers and in the future, your potential competitors. So how do you reconcile those kind of two sides of the business?
So we have offered third-party products in many other areas for years. I mean, if you think about our multi-asset franchise, there's products available that invest in a broad range of asset management products across the industry. In fact, we have a very deep research team that looks at third-party products and has its own parameters to assess the validity of a certain investment proposition. So this idea that certain products ought to be open platform and broad range is not foreign to us. But it works for one client base, and maybe for a different client base, the approach and the product set is different. So we really try to cater to a diversified book of clients.
And then once you do launch these strategies and you have the CLO product as well, but potentially going into private equity and other areas, will there come a time where we'll see Fidelity funds on the Moonfare platform as well?
So that could certainly be an option. Obviously, every product that Moonfare selects goes through the same internal research and assessment process, which is independent. Fidelity doesn't have a say, doesn't have a vote on the investment committee at Moonfare. That's the right way to play this. But certainly, yeah, there might be products in the future that are perfectly aligned to what Moonfare is looking to put into its platform, and we're happy to go through that process. Stefan, do you want to mention something?
Celine, look, at the end, and I'm totally convinced, the quality of the product will decide, whether customers are happy, whether they come back. And I am a big believer in open architecture. Of course, Fidelity is part of it, but there's no obligation whatsoever to put their products onto the platform. They have great products, so I have no doubt that they will make it. But they undergo exactly the same process, and we are not compromising here. Yeah? This is, again, curation. And if you think about what is our role in the play, of course, we have great access. Of course, we have a fantastic, frankly, digital platform. But at the end, it's the trust. The trust that we are building in a broad community. And we take this mission of democratization very serious. If there are players that don't take this serious, that are not striving to have the best offering, unbiased, no compromises on the platform, they will fail. And it's not good for the broader movement that we are standing behind.
Great. Thank you so much, both.
Thanks.
Thank you, Celine.
This CityWire podcast is sponsored by Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Scottish Mortgage invests in some of the world's most promising and exceptional companies, from healthcare breakthroughs to electric vehicles to a green energy revolution. Scottish Mortgage takes stakes in businesses shaping our future economy and society. As with any investment, capital is at risk.